There's nothing scarier than trying to find a doctor. Take it from me. Being a final girl means that once the chase is over, I need fast, reliable, in-network medical care. And that's why I use ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. And the appointments happen fast, usually just 24 to 72 hours after booking. But you can even score same-day appointments, which is a literal lifesaver in my line of work. So what are you waiting for? Stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/13 to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today.
That's ZocDoc.com/13. ZocDoc.com/THIRTEEN.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Hey there. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. Before we get started, as always, we want to thank our new patrons. Kelly Sinitas, PF Kaz, V, GK, Commissioner, Jai, and Kelsey Ige. Thank you guys so much for your support, and welcome to the Pod Fam. If you'd like to hear your name before an episode, then you should check us out on Patreon. Just click the link in the show notes to learn more about perks like ad-free episodes, exclusive merch, and over 4 years of bonus stories. And now, for a little housekeeping. If you listened to the announcement that we posted right before this, then you know we've been having issues with our episodes showing up on Spotify. We were recently able to get several of the missing episodes reinstated, which is a huge relief. But if you listen on Spotify, you probably only got a notification when this new episode dropped. It would really help us out if you could scroll down and download all of those other 13 episodes you've been missing. Plus, I mean, who doesn't love a little extra 13? Without further ado, today's story is The Elizabeths, written by Mattia Heller, and featuring Kayla Temshev, Justin Trebue, Emma Sherjarko, and Haberlin Roberts. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show. Maggie thought of death as her thumb quivered over the Instagram photo. The neighbors were at happy hour without her. And she wasn't thinking of their deaths, of course. She wouldn't wish them dead. Although, she could imagine how each of them would die. For Libby, a fall down the concrete stairs on the way to the restroom at Donnelly's pub. For Elle, a blocked airway from a peanut tossed into her salad by a careless chef. And for Beth, a glance at a text on her drive home that skews her car slightly left into an oncoming truck. But no, Maggie wasn't thinking of their deaths. She was thinking of her own. Not that she'd kill herself this Friday evening in her living room, although she had that all planned out if the desire ever fully arose. A nice country drive, and then a jump from her favorite bridge upstate. The death she was thinking of now was a long way away. A death only after years of sad weekends with no invitations, no dinners at boutique restaurants, no birthday parties, no brunches. Just her and her husband who traveled for work, and her cat Cersei who liked her husband better, and a never-ending calendar of unfulfilled time. Life was quite long knowing that your dreams won't ever come true. Not that these neighbors represented her dreams. Maggie wasn't just hitching her horse to her Whippoorwill Road peers, but there was something about the three women. When they first came over, one lonely Sunday, after Maggie and her husband had moved in, when they greeted her with almost wolfish grins and a welcome basket filled with brie and Marcona almonds, when they told her to join the neighborhood Facebook page, when they exchanged Instagram handles and cell phone numbers, when Maggie gave them the tour of the house filled with half-unpacked boxes, and they oohed and awed at the color she painted the guest room and the way she arranged the living room. So much classier than the last couple who lived here, they said. We can't wait to drink margaritas on your patio. She was so sure that friendship would blossom. She was sure that she was on the verge of social greatness. This move would be all the better because she could reinvent herself, unlike in her last neighborhood. She hadn't stolen it, like they'd said. She had just borrowed Anna's sundress to feel a fraction as lovely. But now, on Whippoorwill Road, she could be happy with these new friends, in this great neighborhood, in this unspoiled life. But after 3 months, these fantasies had never panned out. And instead, here she was, alone on a Friday night. Maggie couldn't get comfortable on her couch. She looked back at the text thread with the neighbors. She had invited the three women over for said margaritas weeks ago. There was a lot of back and forth, but they couldn't land on the date. Maggie's last text hung in the white space of the thread. My schedule is flexible. Send dates that work. Smiley face. No one had responded. Everyone must be very busy, she told herself. Everyone has a life to attend to before they can socialize. But social media told a different story. Beth and Elle worked out at the gym together on Tuesday and Thursday nights, as revealed through a shared routine as Fitbit friends. Elle and Libby were in a book club that read cozy mysteries, and they taunted each other with spoilers in Goodreads comments. And all three of them had posted rosy-colored photos from a winery last week, sepia-colored photos from a brunch the week before. Only days ago, they'd posted watercolor paintings of sad little trees from a sip-and-paint night in town. So now, as the women drank at Donnelly's, Maggie sat endlessly scrolling and eating Marcona almonds that tasted like sand, just to remind her of the Whippoorwill women. Why hadn't they invited her to join them? She was just as educated, child-free, and reasonably attractive as them. She had the same 10 pounds to lose, the same husband to complain about, the same job that was seven steps down from her dream career. And Maggie knew she could be moderately funny and interesting and thoughtful. All of the qualities coveted in a new friend. Couldn't these women benefit from a fourth friend? Three friends were notoriously toxic. Moments later, another picture appeared on her stories. Donnelly's had a live band, and they were playing Irish music. Elle had posted a photo of the three women smiling with the caption, "Drunken Sailors." Beth had shared a video of the band playing Whiskey in the Jar. Maggie's heart swelled with longing. She loved Irish music. Her middle name was Sinead, for fuck's sake. Maybe, she thought, I should just stop by. Donnelly's was only a 15-minute drive, and it would take her the same amount of time to change from her work clothes to something more happy hour-ish. But on second thought, everyone at happy hour came from work, so she could be dancing with her neighbors in less than 20 minutes. Maggie grinned. When she showed up at Donnelly's, the women of Whippoorwill would be so surprised to see her. And happy, mostly happy. They'd grab her by the waist and scream sing the lyrics to Shipping Up to Boston. And it would be a glorious evening of beautiful, budding friendship. She called her husband. It went to voicemail after two rings, as it usually did when he was attending some far-off business convention. Her phone buzzed a text in response. At a dinner with the execs. This is how it always was on these trips. Maggie would call, he would text back. They'd rarely talk when he was gone. And he was always gone. Going to Donnelly's with the neighbors. Don't wait up, LOL. That's great, babe. Take an Uber so I don't have to worry. Maggie tried not to read into her husband's enthusiasm. But after the way things had ended in the last neighborhood, she knew he was probably concerned. Donnelly's was nicely packed for 6 p.m. on a Friday. The kind of crowd that Maggie could slip into. Mill around with a drink in hand on the fringe of friend groups until she spotted her own. She'd tell the girls that she'd just arrived with her coworkers on the other side of the bar, and she'd point at an unassuming crowd. No one would imagine she'd arrived alone. Maggie made a beeline for the bar, and no sooner had the bartender uncapped her a Magners than the Whippoorwill women appeared across the room. They looked even more average in person than they had on Instagram, without the sheen of filters. But that only made Maggie's pulse race more. They weren't this untouchable wolf pack. They were just like her. And naturally, they'd want her to be a part of them. Maggie took a deep breath. It would all work out in the end. As she planned her approach, she drank them in. That mole on Elle's face that sprouted one lone whisker. The way Libby's arms flapped as she danced, like the jowls of a bulldog. Beth's comically thick eyebrows that she just couldn't thread into submission. Picking at others' flaws kindled Maggie's confidence. They weren't so great after all. But her heart rate still increased as she approached them. The band took a break, and Maggie readied herself to say hello.
Hey, Maggie? Maggie.
Maggie turned to see a woman about her age, with long brown hair. The woman smiled a pretty smile, and Maggie searched her memory for why she looked familiar. She noted the woman's black shirt was covered in patches of golden hair. Cersei's veterinarian.
Dr. Lamotte?
Call me Brianna. It's happy hour.
Maggie's shoulders slumped. She'd bumped into the woman who prescribed her cat dewormer instead of bumping into her new best friends.
Are you here for the band?
Maggie asked absently as the music picked up again. Her gaze was still trained on the Whippoorwill women as they danced in a tight circle. A circle Maggie longed to be the core of. To feel her friends' hot breath as they sang. The rhythmic sway of their bodies. The shock of cold as their drinks spilled onto Maggie's arms. But the cat doctor was talking again.
I just come for drinks after work sometimes, and I stay if the music is good.
Maggie grudgingly tore her gaze away from the women on the dance floor and took in the veterinarian, still covered in pet hair, smelling faintly of German Shepherd.
So, you're here alone?
I usually make friends.
Brianna's smile was easy, genuine. But Maggie noticed that she held the smile for too long. Maggie had felt the corner of her own lips do the same, time and time again. This woman was too eager to be friends. Maggie had to get away.
Oh, I'm here with my girls,
Maggie announced, and she pointed to the Whippoorwill women. Brianna's eyes widened.
The Elizabeths?
Maggie frowned at the nickname and then felt a prick of panic.
Do you know them?
Yeah, I used to live next door. to L.
Maggie stiffened.
Oh? Yeah, I live on Whippoorwill too.
Brianna's smile only faltered the tiniest bit, but Maggie caught it.
Oh, I must have missed that in your file.
Oh, it's such a great street. Everyone was so welcoming.
I'm surprised you became such fast friends.
Brianna said, and she seemed uneasy. Maggie held back the accusation on her lips as she spoke. Of course she'd become fast friends with these women. She was moderately likable and funny and attractive, just like them.
Why do you say that?
Oh, no reason. It's just that I tried to socialize with them when I lived there and they never warmed up.
Maggie took a long drink to dull the sting.
Well, I better get back to my group.
Maggie said. Best to get away quick, she thought. Maggie knew a lonely person when she saw one. And this woman could be a stage 5 clinger. There had to be more to Brianna's story. Clearly, a cat doctor who smelled like German Shepherd didn't get on with women as cool as the Whippoorwills. Brianna was absorbed into the crowd as Maggie pushed onward. But she was thrown off now. Maggie's game plan had been disturbed by someone she hardly knew. And now she had doubts that these neighbors would accept her into their orbit. Maggie felt the tears pushing at the back of her eyes. Heartburn from the Marcona almonds scorching her chest. Why did she have to go through all these lengths just to have friends? Why couldn't she ever be anyone's number one?
Maggie, over here, it's us.
The feral eyebrows. It was Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Maggie wasn't ready. She blinked back the tears and felt herself put on that try-hard smile that she saw only moments ago on Brianna. Maggie was pathetic. She turned to the rest of the group.
Hey, friends.
She'd purposely called them friends, even though there was still work to be done. It showed confidence. It showed possibilities.
I just came over after work with some people,
Maggie said, as she gestured vaguely into the crowd. Elle and Libby moved closer.
This is our usual Friday spot,
Elle said. Libby glanced toward Brianna at the bar.
Do you know her?
Oh my God, barely. She's my cat's vet.
Maggie wanted to put distance between herself and the woman the Whippoorwills didn't warm up to. But she couldn't resist pushing them just a little farther.
She just said that she lived on our street.
The three other women exchanged glances, but they kept their smiles. Elle leaned in close and stage whispered, conspiratorially.
Brianna was a little too much.
Exactly.
Libby laughed and echoed her reply, as if in the history of adjectives, no better existed. This revealed everything and nothing. A story of a woman who, just like Maggie, wanted friendship. But she had been too much. Too loud, too drunk, too opinionated, too demanding, too silly, too ambitious, too passionate, too flighty, too. Maggie looked across the bar to see Brianna sitting on a stool and chatting with the bartender. Maggie would not be too anything for these women. She would be their Goldilocks friend. Just right.
I've got to get back to my group soon, but let me get your next round first.
Maggie wanted to make it seem like she was keeping this interaction short. Nothing desperate. The women began their polite objections.
Oh my gosh, please. I insist. You have all been so welcoming to me. One drink, and then I've got to run.
In the dim light, their eyes sparkled in a way that felt almost mythic. Like flames drawing wings closer and closer. Of course, one round of drinks later, the women didn't care that Maggie had joined them. On the next round, Elle was buying them all shots. And one round of drinks after that, Maggie feigned sadness as she said her friends had left without her. Then Beth cried the four sweetest words Maggie could imagine.
Come on, girl. We'll take you home.
They closed their bar tabs, searched purses for wayward keys, and Libby announced that she was going to run to the bathroom.
Oh, I'll come too,
Maggie had said. And there they were, now a twosome. Maggie following Libby through the crowd so closely that she spotted a tiny E tattooed behind the woman's left ear. The letter seemed to pulse in the dim light, taunting and calling to Maggie all at once. For a weird and rapturous moment, she craved to bite it. Maggie felt the alcohol swirl in her bladder, and with it, a growl of doubt. Doubt that these women really liked her at all. Doubt that she'd be asked to another event after the wonder of this night ended. And doubt that she could ever create a friendship everlasting by force. Libby paused ahead of her, checking her phone, hovering on wobbly black heels at the crest of the basement stairwell. A white heat smoldered at the pit of Maggie's stomach, and her hand rose. All it would take was one little push, and Maggie could be their third. Her palm met the small of Libby's back. And then, like magic, Libby spun around and intertwined her fingers with Maggie's.
These stairs are a death trap. Don't let me fall.
And the two held hands all the way down. The morning after Donnelly's, Maggie had lingered in bed, savoring the memory of the ride home in Beth's Honda. She could still smell the Macintosh air freshener that hung on the rearview mirror, feel the stitching of the gray seats under her fingernail, watch the dark roar past her out of the windows as the four whippoorwill women sailed back to the neighborhood. And most importantly, she could still hear Beth's words as they pulled up to Maggie's house.
Let's do this again soon, all right?
But Maggie's breezy feeling had faded into irritation as soon as she reached for her phone and opened a reminder from Critter Care Clinic. Cersei had an appointment Monday for her distemper vaccine. So now, 2 days later, here Maggie sat in the reception room of the veterinary clinic with a pit in her stomach. The cat carrier lay between her feet, and the stupid creature was yowling in its confinement. The whole area stunk of cat piss and wet dog. Maggie bit the inside of her cheek as she waited for the cat doc, Brianna, Dr. Lamont, a woman whose desperation stank worse than her canine-haired clothes. Maggie was determined not to make it awkward. She'd just act like she did at her last appointment. Don't get personal, stick to the cat. Brianna popped her head out of her office. She was wearing a white lab coat dusted in black fur. She called for Cersei. The appointment started as purely professional. Brianna examined Cersei from nose to tail, listened to her heart and lungs, and asked about her diet. Then, it was time for the distemper shot.
Did you have fun Friday night?
Brianna asked. She was preparing the needle, not even looking at Maggie. Maggie shifted in her seat. Oh yeah, of course. I mean, it's always a great time with those girls. She added the last part to see how Brianna would react. Brianna hadn't made the cut with the whippoorwill women. But Maggie had. It was mean to remind her of it, but it was also necessary for Brianna to know that Maggie was not in the market for friendship. Brianna paused, perhaps punctured. Then, without any expression, she flicked some air bubbles out of the syringe.
Well, the Elizabeths are a great time. When I saw you with them, it reminded me of that.
She flicked the needle once more.
So I texted Al, and we're going to meet for coffee tomorrow.
Maggie blinked. Beth had only suggested hanging out again. They hadn't solidified a date. Yet here was Brianna, having coffee with Elle on Tuesday. Brianna had said that the girls never warmed up. So why would she suddenly reach out to them? And Brianna was just too much. So why would Elle hang out with her again? Maggie could feel her cheeks growing red, her stomach twisting and twisting like a dirty dish rag. She looked at the needle in Brianna's hand, sharp and glistening, meant for Maggie's stupid cat. She wanted to shove it in Brianna's eye. Instead, Brianna injected the syringe into the loose skin behind Cersei's neck. Maggie finally managed to speak.
Well, enjoy. Elle's the greatest.
It was then that Maggie caught Brianna's expression. More than just a satisfied grin. She smiled like a woman possessed.
Cersei's all set. She might be a bit lethargic for a few days, but that won't last long.
Brianna pet Cersei gently as she spoke, and Maggie braced herself. Brianna would cross the professional boundary between pet owner and vet. She would ask Maggie to dinner or drinks, or something equally pathetic. Maggie was ready with her canned response. She'd say in her most casual and non-committal tone, "Oh, definitely soon." But then, hadn't Beth said something to that effect on Friday night? Maggie shoved Cersei back into the cat carrier with more force than she liked to show in public.
"Hey, Maggie."
Here it comes, Maggie thought.
"On your way out, check with the reception about our pet rewards program."
And without another word, Dr. Brianna Lamott showed Maggie out the door. Five unbearably long days later, Maggie nearly scampered as she approached Elle's house carrying a bottle of Pinot Noir. The house, the same type of colonial as hers, was not as pretty as hers. It was in need of new siding and some landscaping. And yet something about the fact that it was Elle's soothed the maddening desire pounding at her ribcage. She wanted to tear these women apart. To peel their flesh like roasted chicken, wear their skin on her face, just to truly feel like she was one of them. Maggie had lived in misery in the days following the vet visit, so much so that when her husband called, she couldn't hold back the tears in her voice. "Oh, honey, you haven't been this gloomy since that whole thing with Anna's sundress." She'd wanted to kill him for mentioning Anna, but it was true. She was nearly that depressed. And then, the invitation Thursday morning. A group text message. "Elle, husband's away for the weekend. Wine night at my house Saturday. Beth, you know I'm there. Libby, I'll bring a baked brie. It sounds fun." Maggie had replied. "Let me just double check my schedule." Her schedule was blank. Just to be invited should have been enough to quell Maggie's savage want. But she hadn't truly been accepted yet. Tonight, she had a lot of work to do. When Elle opened the door, her eyes sparkled just as they had at the pub. And again, Maggie felt that enchanting pull.
"Welcome. Come on in. We've been waiting for you."
As Maggie entered Elle's home, she was immediately hit with a scent of a lavender vanilla candle. And another odor. Something musky. As if the candle was trying to cover it up. And then there was the word art. dream, love, hope, believe. Do what makes your soul shine. Whine a little, laugh a lot. And many more obnoxious commands peppered the walls. No wonder the girls had acted so enamored with Maggie's decor. She, at least, had taste. Elle ushered Maggie into the living room, where Beth and Libby were splayed out on a sectional couch, wine glasses in hand. Beth's bare feet rested on a pillow, and Maggie's breath caught at the sight of an E, just like Libby's, tattooed on her ankle. Again, the letters seemed to pulse. No, beckon. And something clenched inside of Maggie. She buried the impulse to grab the ankle and snap it. Elle poured Maggie a red, and the group clinked glasses, all agreeing that this was a long time coming. And the evening commenced. They talked about their jobs and husbands. They talked about the fight Libby had with a stranger in the comments of Goodreads. They talked about Beth's sister, who was caught up in an MLM scheme selling medicinal herbs. And they talked about Elle's beloved Persian cat, who was just put down at the age of 14. Oh, did you use Brianna Lamotte as your vet? Maggie couldn't help but ask. She tried to make it sound like a breezy comment, but the room got quiet. Elle cleared her throat.
No. I use Paws Medical.
And then another weird silence.
But Brianna and I did have coffee this week.
Oh, yeah? How was that?
It was fine. You know, my husband always says I'm too clicky, so when she texted me, I thought, why not?
She's not for me.
Maggie leaned in, hoping for clarification.
She's just not.
Yeah. Coffee was kind of weird. I just don't think we connect, you know? But I could sense she was, like, really trying to make it happen.
I've gotten that vibe before. Some people just aren't for you.
Exactly.
As the women talked about Brianna, Maggie noticed a radiance in their faces that she hadn't before. They looked almost golden. All three truly beautiful. Those flaws Maggie noticed at Donnelly's nowhere near as unsightly as before. Beth's eyebrows seemed more manicured, Libby's arms more toned, Elle's hairy mole a true beauty mark. And Maggie knew exactly what was happening. It was the thrill of gossip. The act of talking shit about others that bonded friends together, that made you feel so superior, you literally glow. It had been a long time since Maggie had glowed that way, but she ached for it. You know, when I saw her at the bar, I mean, she smelled like a German shepherd. There was a pause. And then her new friends howled.
Maggie, you are totally right. I smelled it too.
Libby leaned in close.
She was over at my house once, and I swear, she left a coat of dog hair on my couch.
And that was it. Maggie was in. She felt an effervescence in her veins that had nothing to do with the wine. It was sunshine. It was solidarity. It was sisterhood. About an hour and three glasses of wine later, Maggie excused herself to pee. As she approached the bathroom, she noticed the basement door was ajar. She could hear a dryer spinning below. The wine had taken hold, loosening her limbs and making her feel invincible. She listened to the whippoorwill women laughing at the far side of the house. Maggie knew she shouldn't risk it. but she felt an old urge tingle in her fingers. She just wanted one item of clothing. Just one would make her feel so much closer to Elle and the girls. Just a cami or a t-shirt she could wear under her sweater. She wouldn't steal underwear or anything. That would be creepy. But just a single piece of clothing, right out of the dryer, would make the joy of this night complete. She could already feel the warmth of the freshly dried shirt on her skin. She could smell the clean linen fabric softener. She slipped down the basement stairs, and the hum of the dryer grew louder as she approached, and with it, another sound. Something muffled she couldn't quite make out. She passed storage containers stacked high until she turned the handle of a heavy door. She flicked on the lights, revealing a laundry room. And then, her heart leapt.
Help me.
Oh my God, Brianna! Cersei's vet was tied to a plumbing pipe. The woman sputtered a scream, but her mouth was gagged with a washcloth. Maggie's insides pooled. Why was Dr. Brianna Lamont tied up like a hostage in Elle's basement?
Maggie!
Maggie spun around. The whippoorwill women stood behind her.
It's pretty tacky to snoop,
Elle said. She was still holding her wine glass. Maggie backed against the tumbling dryer as the three women stepped into the room. Libby took a step toward her.
Kind of a bummer. We were hoping we'd get to hang out with you a little longer.
Oh my God, what the fuck? What the fuck is this?
Maggie asked, trembling. Beth smiled.
Oh, you know, wine, cheese, and ritual sacrifice.
What?
Oh, come on, Maggie. Don't act like you didn't feel it.
I don't.
You were talking shit about Brianna. It's like black magic.
Okay, talking shit isn't actual magic.
Maggie insisted, her voice rising in pitch. Elle took a step forward.
Well, it is for us.
Every now and then, someone like Brianna comes along and they want to be part of us. They're so hungry for our attention, it's embarrassing.
We feed off that hunger. That desperation in their blood, it drives us crazy.
And it strengthens our bond.
Brianna whimpered loudly as the women advanced towards her. Maggie leaned against the dryer, her brain swimming in alcohol. She couldn't grab hold of a clear thought. These whippoorwill women were fucking animals.
Fuck, this is sick. You guys are sick.
Maggie managed to say. Elle shrugged.
Sorry you feel that way. Maybe we'll sacrifice you first. Then you don't have to watch.
Suddenly, Libby and Beth were both behind her. Libby's arm was around her throat, and Beth had pulled Maggie's hands behind her back, gripping them tight. Beth's hands were so soft and warm, and Maggie could smell Libby's perfume, notes of jasmine and orange blossom. Elle stood before her, and instead of a wine glass, she was brandishing the serrated knife from the cheese board. Even under the stark light, her hairy beauty mark shimmered like a ruby.
Wait! You don't want to sacrifice me.
Yeah, honey. We do.
No, you need a fourth. You'd be stronger with a fourth.
Maggie could feel Libby's hold slacken just a little, and Beth hardly had a good grip of her hands. Maggie eyed Brianna, who was gazing at her hopefully, no doubt thinking that if Maggie could just get loose, she could somehow stop this insanity. Libby's voice was right in Maggie's ear as she spoke.
Weren't you following?
Think about it. You're the Three Musketeers, but even they can't save the day until D'Artagnan joins them.
Haven't read that one.
Elle said, looking bored but beautiful. The knife glimmered in her hand, inches from Maggie's chest. Ha! Okay, the Golden Girls, Sex in the City, four friends. That's magic. With those words, both Libby and Beth loosened their grip. Maggie wrenched her hands free from Beth and elbowed Libby in the stomach. In the next moment, Maggie held Elle's knife to her neck. Don't underestimate a desperate girl, she told Elle. How easy it would be to pierce Elle's jugular, to watch her eyes roll back to whites, to see blood pour from her throat like a bottle of wine. She could kill them all, and all of the things she loved about the Whippoorwill women that made her want to be one of them and equally made her so crazy. All of those things would be gone too. The knife caught the overhead light in a dazzling gleam. There was a slight scent of German Shepherd. Maggie pushed Elle away from her. She turned to Brianna, who leaned forward, sputtering and sniffling, waiting for Maggie to remove the gag. In one clean movement, Maggie slit Brianna's throat. The girls howled once more. Maggie watched as the Whippoorwill women took turns lapping the blood from Brianna's neck. How they grinned at one another through crimson smiles. How they licked Brianna's slumped body in a way that was almost canine. Yet they'd chastised her for her dog-haired clothes. Maggie clutched Elle's sweater that had been lying on top of the dryer. Her adrenaline cooled as she imagined the feel of the cable knit brushing her collarbone as it slipped over her head, imagined it smelling of Elle. Elle looked up at Maggie, her sparkling eyes hungry. No, wanting. Wanting of Maggie's friendship. Maggie was sure of it. And as Elle moved toward her, even as her sleeve lifted slightly to reveal a tattooed E on her forearm, Maggie felt as light as if she'd jumped from a bridge. She knew. She knew she was in. She knew that she had finally found her people. Everyone could use a fourth. Three friends were notoriously toxic. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This has been The Elizabeths, written by Mattia Heller, narrated by me, Brooke Jeanette. Brianna was Kayla Temshiv. Beth was Justin Trebue. Elle was Emma Sherjarko. And Libby was Haberlin Roberts. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Bridget Freeman and Ian Epperson. You can learn more about Mattia Heller and all of the actors featured in this episode by checking out the show notes and clicking on each person's name. Our producer-level patrons are Tattooed Fox, Rhiannon, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Michael Vasquez, Amy Harper, Jackie Kay, Delta Tango, Chantel Payne, Nick, Stephanie Klinger, Jake R., Abigail Perez, Emily Toll, Kozumine, Kay Kupchuk, and Adeline. Thank you so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us most places under Pod 13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo, and you'll find links in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, you can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. And you can find that in the show notes too. Bridget Freeman is on the stairs, right behind you. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.